Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Lisa Mullins.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. The outpouring of emotion and the images have been extraordinary this week as the country says goodbye to John McCain, his daughter Megan racked with sobs, his widow Cindy kissing his flag-draped casket, Joe Biden's eulogy. And there was a sudden driving rainstorm today as the military honor guard carried McCain's casket up the steps to the Capitol Rotunda, where he lies in state. Vice President Mike Pence was among the speakers at the memorial service inside the rotunda.
In every generation, there are those who put country first, who prize service ahead of self, who summon idealism from a cynical age. John McCain was such a man.
I want to pause and take a look at this moment with Julian Zelizer, a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Hi, Julian.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm good. And, you know, I want to be direct right at the start. John McCain, a prisoner of war who refused early release when the North Vietnamese offered it because they found out he was the son and grandson of admirals, a fierce fighter in the Senate, but also a friend to adversaries like Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden, someone who battled cancer with dignity, all heroic. But do you think he'd be getting this big a send-off if he hadn't also taken on this polarizing president in this moment?
That's a good question, and it's always hard to know a counterfactual, but I do think that a part of the reason there is this attention is because even in his death, he now represents something, just as he represented being a maverick those moments when he took on his own party. Right now, he represents, after his death, a different kind of politics than President Trump is offering. So it's certainly part of why there is such fascination with him at this moment, I think, beyond his own record.
Well, and one of the things he did, we've been talking about this, is that John McCain choreographed this whole week, in part to send sort of messages to the people and to the current president about bipartisanship and how he wants to see the country go.
I think that's right. And I think it's not even bipartisanship. It's just a approach to governance, even if you're a partisan, that he did believe in. And I think part of the tensions that unfolded weren't just about him feeling slighted or insulted by the president, but really disliking the kind of politics the president practiced and practices still today. And so I think he did set it up, but he did it to send a message to the country as much as to send a message to the president about how he was treated.
Yeah. Well, and you know, President Trump said of McCain, "I like people who weren't captured." I mean, just an astonishing comment about a prisoner of war. But tough question for someone we're eulogizing and memorializing today. McCain made it clear to Trump, the President Trump, that he did not want him at his funeral. Should McCain have invited Trump, been that person who's extended, you know, and across the aisle to others? You know, how will history look at that?
You know, I think there it's fair for him to have not extended the invitation. The level of insult and fury from the president was beyond the pale. It wasn't simply normal politics. And he could suspect if President Trump came, this would become a ceremony about President Trump. He's not trustworthy in that way. And so I think on both fronts, it's fair for McCain, who still preached reaching across the aisle, to say, in this case, I can't have my adversary there. That's not how I want to memorialize. And he has former President Obama is there. So it's not about bipartisanship. It's about the president's
personal
politics.
Yeah. Look, do you think people are asking and saying there will never be another John McCain, which seems like a huge statement to make. But I'm thinking, you know, there is no more draft. There are far fewer members of Congress who have ever served. Just your sense of whether that's overblown, that thought. There may not be another like him.
Yeah, I mean, there won't be anyone just like him, and that generation is fading away from Washington, literally or at least professionally. And so in terms of the service, in terms of the long-term commitment to government, that's not what we have anymore. But we're still capable of producing great leaders. And our system has gone through difficult moments before, and we have been able to produce, even out of those tough moments, other great leaders. He himself, I'm sure, would still have this confidence in that. And I think that's true.
And I'm thinking, too, one last question. Someone who could evolve so much in front of our eyes. We have such rigid partisanship right now, but someone who was part of a financing scandal and then went ahead and did financing reform, or who was, you know, did some things politically while he was running for something and said he made a mistake afterwards.
Yeah, that's one of the most interesting parts about him. He reacted to his mistakes and he reacted to bad decisions, whether it was the savings and loan scandal or those moments in the Palin-McCain ticket in 2008, like when in the town hall where he stood up to someone insulting Obama. He could react to mistakes, and so few politicians are willing to do that anymore. Of all the lessons, I think that's a really important one to take away from his career and his legacy.
Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton. Julian, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.